This is an I Am Listening original podcast.
I do think that until you've actually cared for somebody who has had a loss, that you can never fully be prepared for how to care for them. And each individual journey and loss is quite different as well. It's about being adaptable and finding your role as a midwife, as a caregiver for that particular family. One family's needs could be completely different from another family. So yes, the training has done as much, I think, as it possibly can. And Abigail's footsteps has really made a difference.
Welcome to Series 2 of A Journey with Abigail's Footsteps, a podcast about the difference this baby loss charity is making to lives across the country. I'm Nicola Everett, a proud ambassador of Abigail's Footsteps, a charity that supports families at the most difficult time and provides training for healthcare professionals. Sadly, in the UK, it's estimated that one in four pregnancies ends in the loss of a baby. Despite that figure, it's still something people find difficult to talk about, and parents can face a wall of silence. We're hoping this series of podcasts will break down that wall. Parents will share their own experiences, which at times can be difficult to listen to, but we'll also share their inspirational stories of resilience and hope, and how you can get involved in making a difference to so many amazing families. Welcome to episode 3, where we explore the training and support provided to midwives thanks to Abigail's Footsteps. Paula Abramson is my first guest on this episode. She's from Bereavement Training International, which works with Abigail's Footsteps. Paula, thank you ever so much for being on this episode. I guess, firstly, would you mind telling us all about Bereavement Training International and what you do?
Yes, thanks so much, Nicola. It's really a pleasure to be with you today. So I set up Bereavement Training International, which is a baby loss training consultancy, almost 5 years ago now. My background is as a counsellor and psychotherapist, specialising in working with parents after baby loss. And in more recent years, delivering and designing training for midwives and other healthcare professionals.
And why was it so important to you to go into that particular area?
That's a really interesting question, actually. I think quite secretly, I'd always wanted to be a midwife, but never actually done anything about that. So about 25 years ago, when I qualified as a psychotherapist, I saw a job advertised working as the counsellor on the neonatal intensive care unit at St George's Hospital in Southwest London. And I applied for the job and never looked back, really.
And can you tell me a little bit about the partnership with Abigail's and working with them? Because I believe you met David, didn't you?
Yes. So I met David when I was working for another child bereavement charity and got to know David and Faye as well from Abigail's Footsteps. And when I started the training consultancy, interestingly, just before the pandemic, of course, hadn't realised that that was going to happen just a few months after I set up the consultancy, had a meeting with Faye and David, and they were keen for us to provide training on their behalf. And it's been a really amazing partnership. Since the beginning of 2020, we've now delivered training to over 4,500 midwives and other healthcare professionals.
And just talk us through, Paula, why that training is so important, because I think it's perhaps one of the big things that I've learned since being involved with Abigail's myself. I didn't realise that midwives didn't automatically get that training as part of the whole process of qualifying as a midwife, which to me was actually quite surprising.
Yeah, it's really kind of hit and miss. Some student midwives will receive some training in how to support bereaved parents, maybe in some cases just an hour or two across the whole of their 3 years of training to become midwives. And so very few midwives have any specific training in supporting parents after stillbirth or after any kind of baby loss. And really, I guess they learn from experience. So Abigail's Footsteps recognised the need for there to be very specific and in-depth training. And as I say, initially we we designed some online training because it was the pandemic and we weren't allowed to go out and about to deliver the training. We still do deliver the online training and it's been extremely popular because it's really, really accessible. But there's also nothing quite like being in the same room as the people that we're delivering this type of training to. It's a really sensitive subject that we're talking about. We often find that some of the midwives have had their own personal experience of miscarriage or some kind of baby loss. So it's really important to allow them to have some really open and honest discussions about the challenges that they sometimes face in providing this type of support. Also just allowing them space to talk about those challenges. And sometimes they also talk about their own personal experience of baby loss.
What sort of a difference do you think it's made to them, Paula? Because it sounds like it's really adding to their whole training experience and it is giving them some real tools to use in the future. What sort of difference do you think it's made to them?
Well, we do get some really amazing feedback. And I think on the whole, even some of the really experienced midwives will say to us that when they're faced with providing support to parents, just like David and Joe, who find themselves in this devastating position of being told that their baby has died, sometimes they just don't know what to say to them. These are many of the conversations that we have in our training sessions. We base our training on what parents like David and Joe have told us of their experience. And we help them to think about some of the words and phrases that perhaps they should avoid using and some of the words and phrases that parents have told us they've found really helpful and comforting. So it gives, I guess, to answer your question, Nicola, it gives them the confidence to feel that they can provide this support in the best way that they possibly can. And really, you know, I think it's true to say that in situations like David and Joe found themselves in, the midwife who's looking after them just gets one chance to get it right. And so coming along to our training just, I think, gives them that extra bit of confidence.
And what about how they cope with a loss of a baby as well? Because they're human, like all of us, and that must be devastating when they go to work and they deliver a baby that sadly is sleeping. I mean, that just must be awful for them as well.
Yeah, and that's something we talk about a lot in the training. We ask the question to midwives, do they think it's okay for parents to notice that they're having some kind of emotional response? The answer to that question is always yes. Absolutely. Parents tell us that they find it quite comforting when they see the midwife having some kind of emotional response because they, you know, midwives are just, as you say, they're human beings and this is not what they had thought about when they decided to become a midwife. They imagined that they would be there at the most amazing time in people's lives. They didn't necessarily think about the situation that they might find themselves in when a baby has sadly died. So yeah, it's absolutely normal and natural for healthcare professionals to have some kind of emotional response. But of course, we always do add a bit of a caveat there because we say that parents should never feel that they need to start comforting the midwife. So the response has to be appropriate.
And can you tell me, Paula, a bit about the work that you're doing across the country? You've spoken about how many midwives that you've helped with training now. Is this something that's spreading far and wide?
Yes, the uptake for this offering for training has really been huge over the last few years that we've been working with Abigail's Footsteps. I guess it's true to say, I mean, some of our NHS clients will self-fund their training, but many of the training sessions that we provide for NHS trusts will be funded by amazing charities like Abigail's Footsteps. And yeah, there's a constant demand for it, which is really encouraging, I guess.
Do you think any further changes need to be made so this is statutory? What is the current situation?
Well, I'm sure you're aware of the Ockenden Maternity Review. And a couple of years ago, in March 2022, Donna Ockenden published the final review on the Shrewsbury and Telford Maternity Review that they were working on. And as a result of that, I mean, lots of things have changed. Perhaps many would say not as quickly as they would have liked them to have changed. But there was considerable funding made available for not all, but for some NHS trusts to be able to fund training like this for their midwives. We've seen that starting to come through, but I guess it's a place to start from, but it certainly isn't widely available across the whole of the UK.
I'm sure we'd all like to see that change, because as you say, just to give someone the confidence to say the right thing at perhaps the most important time, because speaking to David and Joe Ward, who set up Abigail's Footsteps, that is one of the things that stuck with them and has always stuck with them, is what was said in those immediate minutes after Abigail was born.
Yeah, and I think I'm sure you're aware of the wonderful film that the charity made called The Deafening Silence, and we use that a lot in our training. And there's one particular scene which is taken directly from David and Joe's experience almost 15 years ago now. When they were given that devastating news that Abigail had died in utero, they were told that they would need to go home from the hospital that evening, and they asked if there's any way that they could stay. And the midwife said that they were giving priority to women who were giving birth to live babies. Now, that is a sentence that, as you can imagine, has stayed with them for the last 15 years. And that's a really good example of what not to say to parents in that situation.
Absolutely, Paula. Well, thank you so much for telling us about the work that you're doing. Is there anything else about Bereavement Training International you'd like us to know about?
Well, I guess in terms of the work specifically, that with the partnership with Abigail's Footsteps. A few years ago, Abigail's Footsteps were able to get a big lottery funding grant, and they used a large chunk of that to be able to fund the training. That grant has now come to an end. So I know that Abigail's Footsteps are keen to find a new funding source so that they can continue to provide this training for midwives.
Lovely, Paula. Thank you so much. It's been fantastic having you on the podcast. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks, Nicola.
Kirsten Shepherd has recently qualified as a midwife and has spoken about the training she received. Kirsten, thank you ever so much. You've been training to be a midwife. Would you mind telling me a bit about your journey into midwifery and why you decided to become a midwife?
Yeah, well, I'm one of the more mature students in my cohort. I decided at 41 that I was just going to do it, having dreamt about doing it for about 17, 18 years. I think everything that happened during COVID in terms of our family dynamics changing hugely and having two adults in the house all the time kind of spurred me on to decide that actually I could make it work with family life, and that family could kind of spare me for a few hours a week to go and do something that I dreamt of. So that's how I kind of got into it. But it all really started because I had some amazing experiences when I was being looked after by midwives myself through three pregnancies and childbirth, and found the inspiration, the midwives that cared for me were so inspirational, so caring. And I thought, actually, if I can make a difference to women, birthing people in the way that they had to me, then that would be incredible. What a way to spend your life and your working days.
That's really wonderful to hear that you were so inspired when you were having your children that you wanted to go into that profession, and quite a big step to take. As you say, COVID changed a lot for a lot of people, and many changed careers or started new careers. How have you found the training and the process? Was it everything that you had expected and anticipated?
I went into it with an awareness that I could have rose-tinted glasses. I was aware that I was excited about doing it, but I was also aware that this is going to be tougher than I expect. And not everyone gets through it. Some people just, it's too hard. It's too challenging. It's too stressful. The hours are hard. So I went into it with a real awareness of that. And I think that's probably helped me. I've loved almost every minute of it. There have been some darker moments, but I have actually really loved it. I've felt almost always that I've been incredibly privileged to be able to do it, to have found the opportunity at this point in my life. And it's hard, but the payoff is absolutely worth the difficult bit.
Obviously, we're speaking because of Abigail's Footsteps and raising awareness of baby loss, which for a lot of people is very, very difficult to speak about. Before starting your journey to become a midwife, had you thought that that was something you would have to deal with as part of your new career?
Absolutely, yes. I have been fortunate in myself. I haven't experienced that personally. I've witnessed close friends go through a variety of traumatic event associated with baby loss. But I don't think that anyone goes into midwifery not realizing, not having an appreciation for the fact that you are going to face this. And a big part of being a midwife is recognizing that your role when you're looking after somebody who has lost a baby at whatever term or in the early days of the sort of the neonatal period, your role is to make that journey for them as positive as you possibly can. It's never going to be a positive situation. A midwife's role is to make it as good as it can be in really, really hard circumstances.
And how did you find that element of your training? Did you feel that once you, because you are now qualified, do you feel really equipped because of the training that you've had to deal with those situations?
I feel that I've got as much preparation as I could possibly have from the training. And having done the Abigail's Footsteps training as well, that has made an incredible difference. I do think that until you've actually cared for somebody who has had a loss, that you can never fully be prepared for how to care for them. And each individual journey in loss is quite different as well. It's about being adaptable and finding your role as a midwife, as a caregiver for that particular family. One family's needs could be completely different from another family. So yes, the training has done as much, I think, as it possibly can. And Abigail's Footsteps has really made a difference. It gives you the confidence to go in knowing what to say, what not to say, understanding how the woman and her family might be feeling. So, but I think until you're there, you learn so much about how to care for someone experiencing bereavement by just doing it.
Would you mind telling us a bit more about the Abigail's Footsteps training, what kind of format it took? And you mentioned there about saying the right thing, because speaking to Joe and David, the founders of Abigail's Footsteps, that was one of the key things that really stayed with them after they lost Abigail, was what was said at the time. Would you mind telling me a bit about that training and kind of how it works and what you were taught?
I think the big message is about not making assumptions about what somebody might be thinking or feeling, not putting words into their mouth. I think a lot of people who experience loss, infant loss and pregnancy loss, find that people try and desperately, with the best intentions, desperately try and make them feel better by telling them things like, oh, well, if you've been pregnant once, you'll be able to fall pregnant again, and maybe it was just meant to be. And so many people that we hear from who have been through this say, actually, that's not helpful. And I know the message from Abigail's is about speaking about that baby, speaking about that loss, using their name, making sure that they're not forgotten. People who have lost their babies almost always say that they don't want anyone to forget that that baby existed, that baby is forever part of their lives. And that's a real message, not just from Abigail's, but from people I speak to, close friends who have been through it. It's remembering them and making sure that the parents and the family are made to feel like they are parents, that they are part of this baby's family.
Where you will be working, Medway Maritime Hospital, you do have some fantastic facilities, because of course you've got the bereavement suite there, the Abigail's Place. What's your impression of that facility, and how do you think that will help you as well going forward?
The facility is incredible. It makes it easier to give people the time to spend after they've said goodbye to their baby, whilst they're saying goodbye to their baby. It gives them time to feel as if they've had time as a family with their baby. So the provision that we have, it's effectively like a small flat that's being completely kitted out with all the home comforts that you need. It feels like a home away from home. There's a cool cot in there, which allows parents to spend more time with their babies than they might otherwise be able to do. It's away from a sort of the clinical side of the hospital. So that particular part the provision is for women who are clinically well and don't need one-to-one midwifery care from a clinical perspective, but there's always somebody on hand to give them support, emotional support, and support to care for their baby and give that baby as much care as they possibly can to try and give them some feelings of those first sort of hours and days of newborn life that otherwise they wouldn't have been able to have.
Obviously, providing support for the parents and for the wider family is absolutely crucial, but making sure there's support for midwives is equally as important, because at the end of the day, that, you know, everyone is human, you have feelings. Do you feel that you will be supported correctly if you do have to deal with those really, really sad situations?
Absolutely. Yeah. Medway, I mean, I can only speak for Medway Hospital because that's where I've trained and that's where I'll be working. Because the bereavement team is so well set up and so well provisioned, there's a lot of support. There's always someone to talk to. We have professional midwifery advocates who are people who, if you're, you know, having a bad day, you have a problem, you can speak to them, kind of share your emotional days, share your difficult days. And the midwives that work in the bereavement team are incredibly experienced, lots of experience, and are able to give the midwives a lot of support. But going into midwifery, you do absolutely expect to have to deal with these situations. And I think most of us feel that if we're able to give really good care, then that's a job well done. That's a, you know, that's a good day of work. I think it's really important that we remember that it's not our loss that we're going through, and that our role is support and making the absolute best experience it possibly can be for them in what is obviously a really traumatic time.
It certainly sounds that you feel very equipped to start your new role, and it certainly sounds to me that you don't regret your decision at all in following your dream and training to be a midwife.
Absolutely not at all. No, I cannot wait. I'm really excited. And yeah, I do feel prepared. I do think that each family that you care for, they'll always be something new. You'll always learn something from them. I don't think I'll ever go into caring for any family with thinking, I know what I'm doing, I've done this before. There's always something to learn. And each family, each person has slightly different needs. But yeah, I'm excited to make a difference and have people walk away from my care thinking, actually, that was as good as it could have been.
Baby loss charity Abigail's Footsteps offers counselling for grieving parents and specialist bereavement training for midwives and healthcare professionals. With compassion and care, Abigail's Footsteps has provided solace to countless bereaved families across Kent and the UK. Their Abbey cooling cots have allowed hundreds of parents to cherish precious moments and make memories with their baby, additional time they thought they might never have. Your generous support, help and donations will make all the difference in enabling this incredible Kent charity to continue their invaluable services. To learn how you can make a meaningful difference and support Abigail's Footsteps, visit their website at abigailsfootsteps.co.uk.
Next on this episode, we can hear from two qualified midwives who are now lecturers in midwifery at the University of Bedfordshire. First up, it's Joanna Swanton. Joanna, thank you ever so much for chatting to us. Would you mind telling me a bit about your role? Because you're a qualified midwife, aren't you?
Absolutely. So I qualified in 2010, did my training over in Cambridge, and had very little exposure or experience to bereavement and little training, actually, as a student midwife. I've then moved across multiple different hospitals. I've come into lecturing within the last 2 years at the University of Bedfordshire, and I'm quite passionate on my own experiences as a qualified midwife about bereavement and how I'd felt ill prepared and how that's affected me. So I felt quite passionate about my students having a better experience and having a safe place to learn about bereavement as part of their training, so they're prepared when they go into practice.
When you started your training, Joanna, did you assume that that would be part of it? Did you think, right, okay, well, I will learn how to deal with situations when the worst happens?
Absolutely. I think there was a kind of expectation that we would be taught what to say, how to, what terminology is used, what documentation and paperwork. I know that's always quite a big factor for practicing midwives to get their heads around, and just how to, I think everybody comes into this profession to make a difference and to care for the families in the best way possible. And I just assumed that that would be part of the training, but unfortunately it wasn't. And it wasn't until I was probably 12 years into my career that I actually had a dedicated training day for bereavement, which made me feel much better. However, it would have been much more useful to have that in the training stages and to know where to get support when you do come across a family who have experienced a bereavement, and from a professional point of view, know how to navigate that yourself.
12 years in, that's an awful long time. That's a lot of babies that you would have delivered, perhaps feeling a little bit unprepared as to what to say to mums and dads who maybe had lost a baby.
Absolutely. And I think a lot of the learning that I did have, although there was no formal training, came from those families. I know when I worked in, we did a little bit of supporting roles in the neonatal unit at Addenbrookes, which is obviously quite a high risk tertiary unit. And a lot of the families would tell me, like, it's okay to cry. It's nice to know that my baby meant something to somebody else. And you sort of learn from the families how to navigate those conversations. But of course, it's not the same for everybody. And just feeling more confident and more prepared means that you can provide that extra support, I think.
Thank you ever so much, Joanna. Lauren, if I could introduce you to the podcast now. Lauren Hutton, you qualified as a midwife in 2013. Did you have a similar experience to Joanna?
Well, I would say yes and no. So from very early on as a student midwife, I knew that I had a passion for bereavement. Bereaved families were supportive as well, using my absolute passion. So I think part of that, I sought out a lot of my own learning and development. So I put myself forward for communication courses when they came up through the hospitals that I was working with. I approached the bereavement midwife for additional training. When there was a bereaved family that came in, I would be the person to always volunteer to provide care from them, because I knew that that was, you know, an area of interest and learning for me. So whilst there wasn't anything formally organised in the hospitals, whenever there was any relevant training, I would put myself forward and be very proactive. So I made it very well known to the management and to say the bereavement midwives and things working at the trust at the time that I was, you know, very interested in anything that they had to offer.
It still does surprise me. We've had so many conversations while doing these podcasts that sort of training isn't mandatory. And as you say, it wasn't formal training. It was something that you kind of had to seek out yourself.
Definitely. And I mean, I have a background as a bereavement midwife as well, and there wasn't any formal training when I got that role either. That may have changed now. So, you know, I've been in education for the last kind of couple of years, but there wasn't any official training to do that role. It was based on experience and organising the training yourself.
How important, Lauren, has it been for you then to share your knowledge now to midwives who are coming into the profession?
Oh, incredibly important. It's been, you know, I'm the person, if you sit down and ask me anything about bereavement, I will hold you hostage until I have, you know, absolutely filled your cup with as much knowledge as possible. It is so important for me. You know, anything that's kind of said to these families that can create a negative perception can have such a long-lasting impact on their grief. It's such an important area of care. You know, they've already had the worst happen to them. The last thing we need is to make their experience even more difficult by, you know, inappropriate communication, inappropriate handovers, making, you know, not understanding the processes and things moving forward. You know, we need to make sure that we're getting this care right the first time. So for me, sharing this knowledge, I'm very, very happy to, you know, even in my role now, I'm supporting students and things. I'm quite happy to stay behind after class and, you know, give them that one-to-one tuition if they're interested, going to the hospitals to support them and things as well. And even when I was a bereavement midwife, I was quite happy to have students shadow me and learn a bit more about my role and what we did behind the scenes.
We've spoken to many parents who've suffered the loss of a baby, and they have all said to us that the things that stay with them forever are what is said at the time. And if someone unfortunately says the wrong thing, they don't forget that. So Joanna, it's really, really important, isn't it, that midwives know what to say at the most difficult time for those parents?
Absolutely. And I think we always encourage our students to be reflective learners. And as midwives, we are reflective practitioners. So we're always thinking about the care that we've provided. What have we done well? What could we have improved? And communication comes up in all sort of facets of midwifery, but specifically in bereavement care. And although the families are the pinnacle of our sort of support and where we want to really focus that, I also want to make sure that the students feel prepared. They're not going away and beating themselves up and having trauma based on the experiences, because we know that there's a lot of transference when you're looking after bereaved families and the impact that that can have on midwives. You can't just go home and switch off from that. Those babies and those families stay with you. So making sure that the students feel prepared for that as well, I think, is really important.
Paula Ambramson, I'll bring you into the conversation now as well, because this is your specialist area. What do you make of what you've heard so far from Joanna and Lauren?
Yeah, it's really great to hear both Joanna and Lauren talking about their passion to make sure that parents at this time get the best possible care. And at Abigail's Footsteps, we've been delivering our baby loss training for student midwives at the University of Bedfordshire and many other universities across the country. You know, the facts are that one in four pregnancies will end in loss. We know that every day in this country, about seven babies are stillborn. And so it's really important that the midwives of the future have some confidence and skills to be able to provide the support that's desperately needed for these families. And yeah, we're really, really proud. I know that Abigail's Footsteps, if just one student midwife decides, like Lauren, that they want to specialise in becoming a bereavement midwife, then as a charity, we consider that a success story or a job well done.
Yeah, as you say, it's very heartening to hear these stories, isn't it? And that training is going on because of the difference that Abigail's Footsteps has made. I mean, it's had such a huge impact across the whole country, hasn't it, Paula?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think after a recent training session, Joanna, you provided some really lovely feedback. I think you said that after our training at one of your campuses, some of the students had decided that they were going to change their one of their essays and write about bereavement support.
Absolutely. It was wonderful. The assignment that they had where Paula came and spoke to them was all about looking at vulnerable families. So not necessarily just bereaved families. It could be families affected by substance misuse, domestic violence. There was a whole plethora of different vulnerabilities that were captured. But after the training session, the majority of them changed their idea to focus on bereaved parents and families. And they looked at service improvement and how they could create a lesson plan to support families in perhaps a future pregnancy if they were to choose to have another baby, and how they could navigate that. And some of the ideas that were put forward about memory making, introducing that child to their future baby, they really got sort of grabbed the bull by the horns and ran with it. And I know a lot of those students are now very passionate about becoming bereavement midwives. So it's definitely had probably more than the desired impact that we wanted. The training was fantastic.
That's amazing to hear. And what about the support for midwives themselves as well? Because obviously you guys are human, and when you have to help parents navigate through the loss of a baby, it has an impact on you too. Lauren, do you think there's enough support for midwives as well?
I feel like it's probably a little bit of a postcode lottery in terms of that. I found from working with other bereavement midwives and things in my previous role, the support that we were offered was very different. I'll be quite candid, I unfortunately had some personal losses myself whilst I was a bereavement midwife. So I kind of felt I was relatively well supported. So the hospital referred me for counselling and things to kind of, you know, support me with my own loss while supporting others, you know, with their bereavements as well. Whereas other midwives didn't have that opportunity either. Some midwives, you know, they found that they coped with things through exercise, that kind of thing would help, you know, support them with their mental health and help them in that aspect of their lives. But it was very dependent on what your trust was able to offer. I think most trusts now will have a confidential helpline or maybe a contact kind of counselling service, but that's not specific to your role, and that's something that I think any kind of staff member can access at any point. So it might not be necessarily supporting your work. It could be something that you're going through in your personal life, so it's not specific support for that role. And additionally as well, it can be quite difficult, you know, if you were to struggle to then go to your place of work and share the information and worrying about the repercussions and things of that as well. So I kind of feel that could be a potential obstacle to other midwives accessing that support. But yes, from my experience, I found that it was very varied. So some midwives would have monthly supervision. I was well supported. In fact, I had counselling, but then, yeah, other midwives weren't offered anything at all.
It is something that Abigail's Footsteps have started doing in recent years. And Paula, I guess that's a really good programme, isn't it? It's called Prop.
Yeah. And it is. I'm so glad that you've brought that up. We introduced it just over a year ago, recognising that we wanted to provide a wraparound service, and that the one thing we hadn't been doing up until then was providing support to midwives. So professional reflective occupational practice. These are up to 6 fully funded sessions delivered online or in person by Naomi, who's our lead counsellor at the charity.
Yeah, and we hear from Naomi in the podcast about that in more detail. So do listen if you want a bit more information on that. Joanna, it's been great having you on the podcast today. Thank you so much for chatting about the work that you do. What would you say, finally, to anyone who's perhaps considering midwifery as a career? What would be your advice to them?
Oh, that's a very good question. It's the best job in the world. I fully believe that. And it does, I'm sure Lauren can agree, we do still have days as educators where we think, oh, we'd love to go back. And I do occasionally do the odd bank shift to sort of keep my hand in, excuse the pun. But it is wonderful. It's hard work and there's a lot of pressure. And I wouldn't want anybody listening to this to feel put off, because there has been a lack of support in certain areas, because we're constantly looking at areas that we need to improve. Through our students, through our members of staff, and through our own experiences. As I say, I've previously been affected by bereavement care, not been well equipped and supported. I know, as Lauren previously said, don't mind sharing that I was diagnosed with PTSD following a series of bereavement cases because there was no support. So I think going forward, we're all quite passionate about putting that support in place. So the course and the role is improving every time. And if anybody ever wants to get in contact, I don't know if there's a way of sharing emails, but I'm sure Lauren and I would be more than happy to speak to anybody that's interested in a career in midwifery.
Thank you, Joanna. And yeah, Lauren, it really does sound like things are improving and that changes are being made thanks to charities like Abigail's Footsteps.
Absolutely. We're so grateful to have Abigail's Footsteps coming in, you know, as support with the training and things. I think for the students as well, having guest speakers and things is really, really exciting for them. They hear it from my perspective all of the time when I'm teaching them. To have somebody external come in and talk about their experiences and things as well is just invaluable. And like I say, as a student, we had a parent come and share, you know, their story with us, and that's what made me want to become a bereavement midwife. So I think, you know, if I hadn't had that experience all of those years ago, I wouldn't have necessarily taken the path I have done. So yes, a huge thank you to Abigail's Footsteps. We are incredibly grateful for all the support you give us at the University of Bedfordshire.
And Paula, finally, just a final closing word from you. It must be lovely to hear as well, again, about the changes that are being made and the real positive impact that the charity's having.
Yeah, it's always so gratifying to get this type of feedback, and it just makes all of our endeavours worthwhile. And if anyone's listening to the podcast and you're interested in finding out how you can access Abigail's Footsteps baby loss training, then I'm sure that there will be contact details for you to be in touch with us as well.
Absolutely. Of course, head to the Abigail's Footsteps website. We can make sure that all of the contact details are available there. Joanna, Lauren and Paula, thank you so much for being on this episode of the podcast. It's been incredibly educating for me, and I really appreciate your time. Thank you. My final guest on this episode is Naomi Marston, who's one of Abigail's Footsteps counsellors. Naomi, thanks ever so much for joining us on this episode.
Thank you for having me.
Would you mind just telling us how you firstly became involved with Abigail's Footsteps and your day-to-day role, what you do for the charity?
So I set up the counselling service 5 years ago now, back in 2019, and I run the counselling service and the prop service for Abigail's Footsteps.
Presumably it's been increasingly busy over that time, but of course we've had challenges because we had the pandemic as well, didn't we, in the middle. How did that affect how you ran those sessions for parents?
It was a really challenging time. I'm very proud to say that I continue to see parents face to face during that time. I think disinfectant became my best friend, and everything was disinfectant before and afterwards, and obviously leaving gaps in between. But I thought it was really, really important to still see parents face to face when often the stories I were hearing was that dads were waiting out in the car in car parks of hospitals and not allowed up to be with their partners giving birth or receiving bad news. It was a really challenging time. I'm really pleased to say we're over that.
We've spoken to many, many parents who've either had counselling from yourself or one of your colleagues, and I mean, they can't speak highly enough of what you've done for them. How does that make you feel, but also how valuable would you say that this service is?
I feel really humbled and really honoured to be part of their journey at the most difficult time in their lives. It's a really special place to be, and I value that tremendously. I think it's baby loss is so different to any other kind of loss in your life. Even if you've lost grandparents or aunts or uncles or siblings, to lose your baby is so different from any other kind of loss. And it goes against the grain of what we're taught. It's not the circle of life. So I'm honoured to be part of that journey, but I also love what I'm doing, and I know that there's not enough specialist baby loss counsellors out there to support the amount of parents that are going through this type of grief.
Yeah, which obviously isn't a great thing for those parents who are perhaps not getting that support and not able to speak to somebody. How much of a difference has Abigail's as a charity made, though, to be able to provide those sessions for so many parents?
I'm really pleased to say we've made a huge dent in the market in Kent, London, South East, Essex. We cover, for such a small charity, and there's only three of us that are counsellors, we have seen quite a lot of families over the last 5 years. So I'm really proud of what we've achieved. But obviously, there's always more to achieve. And we are continuing to expand our services. A lot of it will just come down to funding. You know, without the funding, we can't expand the services.
Now, you mentioned at the start there, PROP services.
Yes.
So explain the acronym and who that's particularly aimed at.
Okay, so PROP stands for Professional Reflective Occupational Practice. And I set up the service a couple of years ago, very, very slowly, because I was dipping my toe in the water. What I'd realised and what I'd recognised is that the healthcare professionals that support bereaved parents, and maybe these healthcare professionals such as midwives, junior doctors, consultants, who are supporting bereaved families, but also delivering our babies that are born sleeping, or even late miscarriages, there's all sorts, that it has an effect on them, because we're all humans, and it has an effect on their personal life, but also their professional life. But there's nobody out there supporting them. So I set up this service to support those professionals, to give them the space and a completely private, confidential, therapeutic environment in order for them to explore their thoughts and feelings. I believe that we can only retain our medical staff if they have emotional resilience. And I think we have to look at where are they obtaining that emotional resilience from in order to continue to supporting our parents. So that is what hopefully PROP does.
Once you explain it, it just sounds so incredibly simple and like obvious that that's what health professionals need. And to realise that they're not getting that, or they weren't getting that, I actually find quite shocking, because as you say, they're human at
Absolutely.
The end of the day. And to see a family go through the loss that they've gone through, I mean, that must be incredibly difficult for them.
Absolutely. And to think that we're only covering a tiny part of the country, that actually I'm not aware that a similar service to PROP is being offered anywhere else. So what we have pledged to do is to not only offer the service to the hospitals that we have direct contact with, but to offer this countrywide to any medical professional, including student midwives as well, because I think people don't realise that all student midwives have to support a bereaved parent through their training. And that can be really devastating, and it's emotionally, it can be really big and really triggering. And they need that support they need, that information and resilience in order to continue, because at the end of the day, they're our next generation of midwives.
So how do those prop sessions work? You say they're offered, so no one's under any obligation, I suppose, to come along, but does it matter when they decide that they want to have a chat with you? What's the process?
So the process is no, there is no time limit or time frame. We offer them 6 free sessions, and depending on where they are in the country, that can be done online or face-to-face, if geography allows us to do face-to-face. And then they choose how they want to use those 6 sessions. So some healthcare professionals will want them weekly, straight off. Others will have them fortnightly. I've had others that have monthly. Some healthcare professionals choose to stretch them out a bit longer or use them if there's something going on at work. So say, for example, an inquest is going on, they might want to use those sessions around that time where they know that they could do with a bit more support and a bit of time to actually gather their thoughts together.
What sort of feedback have you had so far?
Thankfully, so far, I think we've had 100% feedback, great feedback. So that's been really encouraging, but it's also allowed us to shape the service slightly. Even so, we didn't call it prop to begin with. We called it something else, and we realised actually that wasn't really encouraging midwives and other healthcare professionals to come forward. So we're always expanding. We're almost always developing. Never saying that there's never room for improvement, because I truly believe that we're on a learning curve as well as everybody else, and we're there to provide that service as best we can.
You mentioned earlier how important it is to try and maintain people within maternity care, because we know how incredibly stretched those services are. Are you hoping that something like this will do that? It will keep staff doing a job that we know they love, but have perhaps struggled with because of experiences they've had and they just haven't received the support that they needed?
Ultimately, yes. I really do. I really hope that it supports them. I also hope that it gives them a sense of their worth, because I think that as medics and healthcare professionals, they're quite humble in what they do and they don't realise the importance of their work. There's not people waiting, patting them on the back saying, "You did a marvellous job today." You know, it can be really isolating. They've supported, say, you know, bereaved parents, and then they go home and there's no one there to say, "You did a great job." So yes, I'm hoping that it will help us to retain and encourage some of our new staff coming through to stay within the profession that is so worthy and so needed.
And we've spoken to bereaved parents who've said just how crucial it was that at that moment, maternity staff said the right thing.
Yeah.
Did the right thing, because they've experienced, unfortunately, situations where that wasn't the case, and that stays with them for the rest of their lives. Do you think things are changing for the better in that regard, and that maternity staff are better equipped to help parents, lead them through that time, but also say the right things to them?
I think there's a lot more awareness now around how you say things, what you say, how you deliver bad news. And I'm really pleased that it's not only Abigail's Footsteps as a charity that delivers free training on that, but there are a few other charities as well that cover the country that deliver the same, or at least, you know, you can, there's information leaflets and stuff. It's always difficult to deliver bad news. No one's saying it's ever easy. But I think the importance of when you've said those words, you can't say it back. You can't take it back. And those words tend to stay with those parents because they're in such a vulnerable situation. So it is really, really important that we get it right as much as we can. And that doesn't mean that you have to be perfect all the time, because none of us are. But to just be human and just to say, even if it, you say, "I really don't know, but I'm going to try and help you here," or "You guide me, you help me, you tell me what you need, you tell me what you want." I think parents would be more open to that than the medics coming in thinking that they have to know it all.
I think the work obviously that Abigail's are doing, that you're doing, is really breaking a taboo. I mean, it sounds like we still need to talk a lot more about this, but we're making good progress. We're making big steps.
I hope so. I think we, you know, we try and shout from the rooftops, and hopefully people will hear us shouting from the rooftops. Yes, unfortunately, it's an awkward topic, isn't it? And that's why it's taboo. I still support parents who say, you know, I passed my neighbour and they just looked at me and walked the other way, or, you know, my friends haven't reached out to me, or, you know, someone's has reached out and said this horrendous thing. So, you know, not everyone's ever going to get it right, but we do need to break it down, and we do need to just generally tell the public, you know, how to approach these parents, and we need to talk about it more, because this isn't, and unfortunately, it's not a one-off event. Babies die every day. Babies die every day in the UK. So we should be talking about that.
There could well be some healthcare staff who are listening to this saying, I could really benefit from that support, and perhaps those prop sessions would be something that they would want to get involved in. What do they need to do? They may not well live in Kent. They could live, as you say, anywhere in the country. But what's the best thing for them to do to be able to access that support?
So they just need to email me. So my email address is naomi@abigailsfootsteps.co.uk, or they can go onto the website and they can find my details on there, and they just need to email or phone or reach out anyway. Doesn't matter. They don't need a referral. It's all private. It's all confidential. I don't share who's contacted me, so they can do it anytime they want.
And obviously, this is not a sign of weakness in anyone, is it? And I think sometimes we have that typical British stiff upper lip, don't we, where we all try to be more than human, particularly if you're working in that profession maybe, and you just think, I'm meant to cope with this, and that's just not the case.
I perceive it as the opposite. I perceive it that actually, if you reach out for support, actually you have a great amount of emotional intelligence, and that actually you recognise that, and you recognise that you're a human, because we all are. And, you know, you recognise that not only you deserve that support, but actually it's going to make you a better professional. I think it's from coming from my counselling background, we as counsellors, we all have to have an hour and a half supervision every month. And I know that this isn't pure supervision, but for us, you have to do it. So we don't have a choice in this. So we just expect that that's what everyone should have or should be able to access. And we all know that it's such a valuable service. Even if we turn up to our supervision session thinking, oh, I don't really know what to talk about today, or I don't really know, you know, there is always something. But it allows us to be far more holistic about us as individuals and as humans in our personal, but also in our professional lives. So I think that needs to have the message, that message needs to get across to all healthcare professionals as well, is that this isn't just about anyone judging you. This is about your time. It's completely confidential for you to explore what you want to. It might not even be what you've particularly gone through. It might be something that's personal, but it has a knock-on effect on your professional life.
Naomi, thank you so much for being on the podcast. It's been wonderful to hear about the work that you're doing, and I know it's going to be incredibly valuable to an awful lot of people. So thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you so much to my guests. And on episode 4, we'll be hearing about maternity care for Black women and their families. Thanks for listening to A Journey with Abigail's Footsteps. If you'd like more information about Abigail's Footsteps or how you can make a difference by supporting or donating, please click abigailsfootsteps.co.uk or follow us on social media.
This has been an I Am Listening original podcast. For more information, head over to our website, iam-listening.co.uk.